I've got 10:01, so I'm Matt Mahoney, Public Works Director. I can't tell if y'all can see us because usually I can see like a little cutout on ours, and but we got multiple people here in the conference room at the Public Services Building in Benton
We can
County.
see you. We
Okay,
can see you.
perfect. So I'll go ahead and convene the meeting. It is now, I'll just say 10:01. Just for my purposes, I'm gonna do a verbal roll call so I can do my best to make sure I get everybody accounted for. Start out, Benton County, Commissioner McKay is absent. I am here, I'm Matt Mahoney. City of Benton City.
I'm sitting in for, yeah, so
That's
I'm the
right,
new
yes.
person.
And what was your name again?
Jenny McCombs.
Jenny McCombs. Thank you, Jenny. And how do you spell your last name, Jenny?
MCCONBS.
All right, City of Kennewick.
Chuck Torelli.
Thank you, Chuck. City of Kennewick. Anybody online with the city from the city of Kennewick?
I don't think Martin's here. Okay.
He should be here. We just know.
He was on his way. So.
Oh, okay.
He should be coming.
City of Prosser. See anybody? City of Richland.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Carlo D'Alessandro.
City of West Richland. I see Richard Bloom on there. Welcome, Richard. Basin Disposal. Nobody yet, but they may come in. WM.
Zach Savros.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Mackey.
Okay, and public citizen, Cindy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Cindy. Anthony Searles for our agricultural representative.
Yep, I'm here.
And Benton Conservation District. You see Kara up there. And see, I'll just let you all know if you just want to see yourself. Michelle, you want to go ahead and start?
Introducing ourselves, is that what you're wanting?
Okay, and Tony is here. Carlo.
I'm not hearing anyone.
Oh.
Yeah, they're all muted. I'm just kind of reading the names off. I see Cole, and I assume he's with the Department of Ecology. Is that correct? Hey, Colin, can you hear us?
And yes, Colin is with Department of Ecology.
And then I see Nigel Baumer. Is that, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, it's Baumer, which is close enough.
Okay. And you're with, are you with the Department of Ecology?
No, I'm with Herrera for supporting the city of Richland on the organics feasibility study.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
And Delaney. Welcome, yep. Delaney.
Hi there. Hi, everyone. I'm with the Department of Ecology as well.
Perfect. Thank you. And did I miss anybody? All right, not hearing anybody. Anybody that I missed, I'll be able to pick up on the recording when I go through to do the minutes. So if I missed you, I apologize. The next order of business is public comment. So I'll open it up for public comment right now. Anybody have any comments? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to approval of the agenda. I would like to make one change. I'm going to have me and Clayton here with Benton County. We're both going to have to leave. We need to be at another meeting in Prosser by 11 o'clock. So under 7C, if I could move that up to A to allow enough time for Department of Ecology and the City of Richland's consultant to do their presentation. Ours should be short and sweet. So does that sound okay to everybody?
Sounds good.
All right. And I don't think we need to do motions and all that for approval agenda. So if anybody has any changes or questions, they can ask them. If I don't hear any, then we'll just say they're approved as presented. So with that, and I'll move on to approval of the minutes from the previous meeting, which was May 14th. And it'll be the same thing here. I don't need a motion. It's just if anybody has any questions or changes, they can present them now. And if I don't hear any, then I'll just be adopted as presented. So does anybody have anything? Oh, okay. Hearing none, the minutes are approved as presented. The very first action, the only action item we have is election of a new SWAC chair. Right now, I am, of course, the secretary. We got Richard Bloom as the vice chair. And I would like to make a nomination of Chuck Torelli as the chair. And so that's my nomination. Is there anybody else that has any, would like to nominate anybody the chair?
Oh, for the love of God, nominate somebody. I kid.
Hearing no other nominations, I'll ask for somebody to make a motion.
Since I move to nominate Chuck Torelli.
I'll second that.
Hey, Chuck, at least you showed up.
Thanks, Rich.
All right, so we have a motion, we have a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So it was unanimous, Chuck. So with that, I will turn over the agenda to you with the change, the request that Clayton, myself, do the update on the moderate risk waste facility.
And let us move directly to that then.
I'll turn that over to Clayton.
So the update that we have currently for the moderate risk waste facility is that we got preliminary approval from Ben Franklin Health District for a permit after they finalized their stuff with the Department of Ecology. And we have a final facility inspection walkthrough on Tuesday, July 15th, which is coming Tuesday, with a anticipated opening date to the public of August 20th for the facility to be operational to the public. There's just a couple of tiny things we got here and there that we're finalizing this week to get that done. And then we should be able to meet that deadline as far as Matt and I are concerned, looking at all the stuff that we've went through and finalized the stormwater study with ecology that the ecology requested from us that we kind of didn't have finalized. So we got that done. and the other requirements that were covered under the WAC that we needed to meet. We got all that stuff taken care of. And with operational hours and days running from Wednesday through Saturday, 8 to 5, will be the business hours that we will be open to the public.
And the only thing I'd like to add is that we have been working with, her name is Katie Duvall. Not sure exactly what her position title. I apologize. She works for the county. I call her our PR person.
Communications coordinator.
So we've been working with her. Clayton will continue to work with her, but that's going to be a full update of our website. The moderate risk waste facility will have a separate page. They'll be able to get to it from the solid waste, but it'll be a separate page. But we're looking at doing a major update of the website. She's going to be working on all of the news bulletins that will go out to the radio and all of that information on the opening. Kind of major movements going on right now to get everything in place on the opening date, including getting the information out about the grand opening of it. That being said, we also have tentatively scheduled, and the reason we say tentatively, I'm not, and right now, is there is a walkthrough that is scheduled with the Benton Franklin Health District, which is kind of the last step, is them doing a walkthrough. They've done multiple walkthroughs, but they have a lot of new people there, so I think they want to see the facility. That is on July 15th, and then, of course, the tentative date is time and date is 2 p.m. on Tuesday, August 19th, for the ribbon cutting ceremony. We got an email from Katie, who has been reached out to all the cities, and that has seemed to be a good date for the cities as well. I know that one of our commissioners will be speaking at it. So the last question I have is, would anybody from the SWAC committee like to speak at the ribbon cutting ceremony?
Rich, you have been in this for much longer than most of us. Yeah. Would you like to say anything, honestly?
Yeah, I agree.
I've sort of been in it forever. So what would be the date that we plan to have a ribbon cutting?
That is Tuesday, August 19th at 2 p.m.
I guess I will put it on my calendar. It's been a long time coming.
Yes. And so if you're okay, Richard, I'll have Katie Duvall from the county, the communications coordinator, director, reach out to you to get everything scheduled with you. So I'm not sure how long they're going to be asking for to do a speech, but I know that we're inviting all of our local state reps and federal reps for our area to show up. I'm not sure they'll say anything, but I know one of our commissioners will speaking. I'm assuming it might be Commissioner Alvarez that may be doing it. And so, yeah, well, if you're good with that, Richard, I'll have her reach out to you.
Okay.
Okay, perfect. Is there anybody else who would like to speak?
So I guess the question is, this will be the official opening. Are we going to soft open?
No, this will actually, this ribbon cutting ceremony is actually the day before our official opening. The only soft opening that we will do is, once, if we're permitted, even before that date, we do have a few people that have reached out that got some waste that they need to get taken care of. Even Ben Franklin Health District has reached out to us that people are still leaving stuff on City of Prosser's site where they have, BDI has their thing. I haven't heard anything from Benton City site, but we do have a few community members that have some stuff that they've been waiting patiently to. So, when we're permitted for, we may have them come and be able to drop some stuff off. So that's kind of going to be our soft opening, per se, is reaching out to those people once we're permitted and allowing them to come in and get stuff. And then as new people call up, we'll let them come in. But yeah, we're, our plan is to do the ribbon cutting, and then the very next day is the opening.
Okay, well, I mean, soft opening can just be how hard we advertise.
Yeah. Well, our guys do have a list of people that have reached out to them, and then once we get permitted, if the permit is before this date, then we'll reach back out to them and allow them to bring stuff in. So,
okay.
And the other question I have is on the July 15th walkthrough date. I mean, I understand there's paperwork to be filled out, all that jazz. But is that the 5 weeks duration between the final walkthrough and actually opening up? What is the driver for that type of weeks?
Well, it's the finalization for Ben Franklin Health to finalize the application and issue the permit. That's not a county time frame. That's a Ben Franklin Health time frame.
Okay, so they have a department. We have 30 days.
I don't know if it was exactly 30 days
or whatever.
It might have been 30 days. You know, I think it was actually. But they said they had to have that period after their final lawsuit, finalize the paperwork, and submit us to actually give us the permit.
Okay, so that's for the requirements.
Yeah, and it's the same thing even for our mobile events that we do. We have to provide them with a minimum of 30 days notification of even doing an event, and then we get the permit for that event based on that 30-day notification. So.
Okay, great.
So that was all I had. Like I said, I'll have the luxury of being able to listen to everything on the recording, and I will do that because I don't want to miss the Department of Ecology's presentation. But I'm going to have me and Clayton excuse ourselves, and I'll keep it in good hands. So thank you.
Okay, so next on the agenda is the Organics Management Laws, and this is a report from Department of Ecology. So I will turn it over to Ecology.
Yes, thank you guys. Michelle Mulroney, as you know, I attend all of your Slack meetings, but in addition, I brought with me today Delaney and Colin. They're both on the organics management team. So I'm going to have them do the update because they're the ones who are the official organics people and can give you all the details. So.
Thank you,
Michelle. Great. Thanks, Michelle. Hi, everyone. I'm Delaney Carr, organic specialist at the Department of Ecology here with Colin, our organics lead. I'll just pull up the presentation I have about the organics recycling collection area. So just give me a moment here. Okay. Can everyone see, here, I'll put in presenter mode. Can everyone see this presentation? It says organics recycling collection areas.
Yes, ma'am.
Cool. I just a heads up, I can't see anyone on the screen. I only see the presentation. So if you put anything in the chat or want to make a comment, just verbally interrupt me. Kind of feels like I'm talking to myself, but So again, I'm Delaney, organic specialist at the Department of Ecology. I'm one of the newest members of the organics team, but I primarily work on supporting local jurisdictions with the organics recycling collection areas, or what you'll hear me call ORCA. And I'm also involved in developing the ORCA waiver documents and process alongside Colin. So it sounds like this is a strong topic of interest for Benton and Franklin counties. So happy to dive into it a bit more for everyone. I have a couple slides about some organics data just to set the stage on the passing of the organics management laws. I'll try and breeze through it pretty quickly so I can get to the heart of the presentation, which is more about ORCA requirements and information. So like I said, to provide some context here for the organics management laws, Ecology conducted a waste characterization study in 2020 to 2021. And this study revealed that organic material is the largest material that is going into our disposal stream. And it makes up the largest percentage by just shy of 23%, or I believe this equates to about 1.2 million tons in that 1 year. So it is our largest stream. And why this is important is that organic material that goes to landfill when it's compressed and breaks down in the landfill, it emits methane emissions, which is a very strong, potent greenhouse gas. And yeah.
Looks like your slides are not progressing because you're still on the title slide.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
There we go. Perfect.
Oh, it works here? Are folks okay if it's just viewed like this? I think maybe going in presenter mode messed something up. Okay.
Yeah,
I'll keep it like this. For methane emissions, this is a pie chart of methane emissions across the United States, and it shows that MSW or landfills are the third largest contributor to methane emissions of 15%. So Washington State is trying to address this at the state level and reduce methane emissions across Washington. So like I said, methane is the why behind the passing of the organics management laws because of its potency as a greenhouse gas. It is 84 times more potent than CO2 or its global warming potential. And this is what Washington State is hoping to work on. So with that in mind, the methane emissions, hoping to reduce methane emissions, Washington State identified several climate strategies. And the text might be pretty small here, but I'll just read across these bar charts. And one of them is complete streets. So that's on the far left bar. This is like investing in walkable communities, building more walkable communities. Then it's scrap and replace programs, electrifying ferry terminals, reducing fleet vehicle emissions, reducing refrigerants. And then the last one on the far right is organics management. And as you can see here, the green bar outpaces the yellow bar. So this means that organics management avoids more greenhouse gas emissions and outpaces the total investment in organics management infrastructure. So that shows that organics management is a highly cost-effective climate strategy in Washington State.
Delaney, am I reading that right when it looks like it's $800 million investment, though, to meet that goal?
It looks like it's just shy of $80
million. $80 million. Okay, I'm sorry. I couldn't see that.
No, you're good. It's really small numbers here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So this is the organic material data of organic material disposed in Washington landfills. And this is using, I'll show the year down there. This is has 2015 numbers, 2021, which is our recently public data, and then 2030 goal with our ambitious goals in mind, the reduction goals we're hoping to achieve by 2030. So as you can see, between 2015 and 2021, there was an increase in organic material disposed in landfills in Washington, but food waste slightly decreased from 830 to 827,000. And this, we do have a long way to go. We have ambitious reduction goals, but I would like to point out that these two bars of 2015 and 2021 are before the passing of the organics management laws and before these requirements are beginning to kick in. So we do expect to see the amount of organic material disposed in landfills to decrease between now and 2030 and beyond. So last data slide here, looking specifically at the composition of that 2021 bar chart. You can see here that food waste makes up the largest portion of organic material disposed to landfills, at least in 2021. And then just behind that is yard waste at 13%, wood waste, and animal manure. So this shows that there is a huge opportunity in Washington State to divert organic material from landfills, but especially food waste. And that's what these organic management laws were passed with in mind and are really trying to focus on in the future. So going into the ORCA requirements, I know that's the strongest interest here, so I'll spend most of my time talking about this and answering any questions. So the organics recycling collection areas are a portion of the organics management law that was passed in 2024. This is different than the business organics management areas, or what you've maybe heard Ecology called BOMA. I don't have any slides about BOMA because Benton and Franklin County are not currently impacted by those requirements, and we're just going to focus on ORCA. But different than BOMA, ORCA is driving the collection of organic material in areas based on population size. And written in statute, generally ORCA impacts cities and towns with a population of more than 25,000 people and areas that produce more than 5,000 tons of solid waste. So the requirements here, so starting in April 2027, residential single family homes and non-residential customer or businesses producing 0.25 cubic yards, which approximates to 45 gallons of organic material per week, must have curbside organics collection available to them on a year-round basis. And for those who may not know Ecology, we've recently defined year-round as at least 26 weeks a year. So in 2027, organics collection needs to be available to these residential and non-residential customers. And then in April 2030, those same residential and non-residential customers must have organics collection provided to them on a non-elective basis, and it must include the collection of food waste. So this is the organics recycling collection areas map that identifies ORCA impacted areas come 2027. This was recently published in January of 2025 for the first time, and we anticipate updating it every September as we receive yearly population data from the Office of Financial Management. And if you're familiar with the BOMA map, this ORCA map looks a little bit different. The areas almost look geographically smaller. And that's again speaks to how ORCA is focused on those areas with a higher population size. So that's where these maps differ a little bit. And I'm sure you're all familiar with this, but just wanted to put a slide in here that Benton and Franklin County, the Tri-Cities are impacted by our ORCA impacted areas, the incorporated areas, and UGAs. I think there's a couple pockets in here that are UGAs that border incorporated areas. So these three areas are impacted by ORCA. So written in the statute, there is language that affords waivers to be used on the path of compliance. There are two waivers that we're talking about, or that I'm talking about here. And one is the ORCA service waiver, which is issued to jurisdictions or part of a jurisdiction, extending the timeline of organic management collection service. So these are areas that plan to comply with the ORCA requirements, but need more time to do so. So it's sort of extending that timeline. This is a renewable waiver up to 5 years, and it includes an application and what we're calling an ORCA readiness plan. So that's what Colin and I are currently in the development phase of, and I'll have a little bit more information as we go through this presentation. And we plan to have this available for early use in 2026.
Delaney, on the for service waivers, who has to submit that? Does that be the county? Can be a city? Who is the submitting authority?
So it will be the county. I do have a slide about that in the next couple of slides, but I will say, to answer your question, it is the county. So then for the second waiver that a jurisdiction can apply for is what we're calling a frequency waiver. This is issued to jurisdictions who plan to meet the ORCA requirements, you know, come 2027 and or 2030, but plan to do so through another way other than curbside collection. So this waiver is intended to support the innovation of new technology. You know, we've seen a lot of new technologies pop up with managing organic material, and we want to account for that. And this new technology would need to reduce the odor and volume of material. So this is a one-time waiver and also includes an application and what we're calling an alternative collection plan. This is also, we're currently developing at the same time as the service waiver and plan to have it ready for use in 2026. The last box is some guidelines. I'll only briefly mention this because I have a whole nother slide about it, but this is guidelines that our team at Ecology is putting together to provide local jurisdictions some guidance on how to navigate granting individual exemptions from these collection requirements. So I'll talk more about that in the next couple of slides. So this is a bit more new information that Colin and I presented at WSRA in May. But what information we wanted to share is some service waiver justification. So for the ORCA service waiver I was talking about, this, based on our interpretation of the RCW, we've identified five different justifications a jurisdiction would apply for an ORCA waiver or ORCA service waiver. The first is the distance to an organics management facility is infeasible to transport material, so it's too far away. The second is the nearest organics management facility doesn't have enough capacity to take more incoming feedstock. The third is curbside collection is economically infeasible for ratepayers in the community. The fourth is the transport of organic material is restricted due to the Appomattox quarantine boundaries. And then the last one is curbside collection negatively impacts overburdened communities. So these are the five justifications a jurisdiction could apply for an ORCA service waiver. I think I had some animations on this, but to kind of walk through this timeline, I've outlined the, you know, there's the 2027 requirements where organic service must be available, and then in 2030 requirements where organic service is on a non-elective basis with food waste. And to where we currently are is, you know, here in 2025, developing the waiver process, and we anticipate or plan for jurisdictions hoping to receive a waiver for 2027 to apply in 2026. Or if you're looking for a waiver in 2030, you'd apply in 2029. So the year prior to the ORCA requirements. We don't have specific months, days, you know, we're still in the development phase and trying to identify that, but for your knowledge, it's the year prior. So here's kind of getting to that question of what this waiver process will look like. And this is the same steps for the service and frequency waiver. So the process and steps are the same, but the first step is a county will submit a waiver application to Ecology. And that will include, you know, basic information, asking the county name, asking what boundaries of the ORCA impacted areas you're looking for a waiver for. So maybe this is a certain city limit, maybe this is for a UGA, a census tract, et cetera. You'll also outline your waiver justifications in this application and provide supporting evidence to those justifications. So then the county will submit that application to Ecology, and Ecology will review the application. Ecology will respond one of three ways. We'll either say the application is approved and you can move forward in the waiver process, or we could say the application is on conditional approval. So maybe we need a little bit more information or more supporting evidence before moving forward in this process, or ecology could deny the application. You would not move forward in the waiver process. So if your application's approved or on conditional approval, the county will fill out either an ORCA readiness plan or alternative collection plan, depending on what waiver you're applying for. And ecology will provide some technical assistance here on strategies you want to identify, et cetera, on how to fill out these plans. And then once those are completed, ecology will review them and either grant or deny a waiver to the county in its respective ORCA impacted areas that were identified in the application. And again, we're still in the development phase here, so some of this stuff could change, but currently where we've landed is these five steps. So the ORCA readiness plan we're currently developing more of the details here, but wanted to share it just as kind of a heads up. We do have a work plan that we've currently developed, and this is really the heart of the ORCA readiness plan and moving forward in the waiver process, because this is where we're asking jurisdictions to identify specific strategies on how you're going to make progress towards meeting the ORCA requirements while you have a waiver. So we'll put some, I don't have examples in here right now, but this is kind of a rough example of, you know, identify a strategy, list some details to that strategy, when you think you'll be completed, any required resources or partnerships, and milestones, and then what your end deliverable would be here. And then we have
Do entities have an opportunity to start inputting suggestions at this point or not?
We are currently in the peak of the development phase, so we're very open to feedback on the ORCA readiness plan or other details of this. I don't know if you have specific feedback off the top of your head, or we can also chat about it separately.
I was just curious about that. And Richard, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was going to jump in. Is there a vision? Does ecology have a vision of what it would look like?
What the ORCA readiness plan would look like?
No. What the operation would look like. We can get a garbage truck, pick up stuff. Where does it go? Is the push to have us to have a digester?
We're not pushing like a specific angle of how jurisdictions would like to manage their organic material. This is that I would say that this is kind of what this work plan is meant for, is to get jurisdictions thinking about the options that they want to pursue to manage their organic material. Maybe it is an anaerobic digester. Maybe it is expanding current curbside service, or building your own facility, or a private business coming in and opening their own facility. This is sort of the brainstorm phase of trying to think through those options and seeing what would work best for your area.
My biggest fear is this will, it'll shift the organic material into our sewer system and overload our sewage plants.
Sure.
And that's, I can see, restaurants all getting super food garbage disposals put in, and we're going to have a nightmare.
Right, with like a local wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah. And that's, it's a digester, but we have limited capability as far as bio. I know Kennewick, I know West Richland and Kennewick both put in, and I think Pasco's putting one in, a digester to service the, we have one to service the wine industry. Because it protects our loading to our sewer. So we have a digester that we use. But that's my biggest fear is that as you push restaurants or large chains, they're going to come up with just it's going to go down the sewer. Would that be an acceptable option that the ecology would say of the generator? I mean, is the whole scheme of this to place the ability to collect on the cities, the county, whatever it is, and if the generator decides not to get collected, is there enforcement by ecology?
Yeah. So to that enforcement piece, that's something we're still, talking through. Currently, there's not like an outlined enforcement piece in the statute. But this has come up with the BOMA or Business Organics Management Areas conversations of like how to enforce or who enforces these requirements.
Delaney, I'm going to interrupt you.
What would be a big deal if we nobody brings
Rich, it back. Rich, I'm sorry, but Colin had his hand up. I think he has some feedback on this. Colin?
Thanks. Can folks hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. And I'm having my audio is a little quiet, so just let me know if I'm missing the mark here. But yeah, I just wanted to elaborate kind of on Delaney's comment around in this specific requirement for ORCA, there is no necessary like statutory definition of who the enforcement body is. Ecology is we are given rulemaking authority starting in 2030. If we are tracking our data and we're saying we're not anywhere near our stated goals, then we can write rules to tighten the requirements. So there are a lot of exemptions provided in the law. And one of these is the waiver process that Delaney is describing now. So that I would say is kind of the only enforcement mechanism specific to this ORCA statute we're talking to. But the readiness plan, which is shown here on the screen, is really to support jurisdictions identify how are we going to prevent contamination. And this is, I'm kind of reading in between the lines here, but what is our mechanism to preventing contamination in commercial waste at businesses, at restaurants? What is our mechanism to say, we've talked to our wastewater treatment plant, they aren't suited, they don't have capacity to take food waste down the garbage disposal. And so this readiness plan is really meant to start to have these conversations to identify what is the best strategy to meet these requirements in the populated areas of Vinton and Franklin County. So that's kind of where ecology is at. And, I just for the record, it's sometimes it's useful to have some sense of the legislative history of how these laws were formed and passed. And our laws do look different than existing organics management laws, like in California or Massachusetts. And stakeholders who were part of kind of these big groups to define these laws, there is not a big enforcement mechanism baked into this piece of the puzzle. And therefore, we do think so that we are meeting our organics management goals and so that we're not pushing heavily contaminated streams to our processors. We all do need to be on the same page about how are we going to manage this and what are the resources that we as ecology could develop statewide to be technical service resources, or what are folks doing at each jurisdictional level, again, to both ensure compliance but also minimize contamination.
Martin, I've got a question. Couple of quick ones we can go into detail or just skip over the top and talk about more later. It sounds like if, as this topic develops, it would be great if the county was pushing to SWAC members to make sure that we know what's coming up. It looks like there was an opportunity to provide public comment on this, and that was last month. And there may be more opportunities in the future. And so I appreciate you opening the door to hear comments today. That's great. So I guess if there's an email that runs around that alerts about this meeting, if those people that are on that email list could get some kind of links or recommendations, or who would you like comments to be written to, that kind of thing would be great. I'm going to hit a couple things real quick. New facilities cost money. How is that funded? Wastewater treatment plant loads. That's a question. If you were to add a new program, we would need new or more totes, more workers, more trucks. We would need the facility itself, wherever that is, the odor or the vectors that come off of that, whether it's odor or bugs or critters. Those kinds of things are not easy to quickly come up with, nor are they easy to fund. And so I guess this is a process we'll have to spend some time talking about, because we're going to have to turn around and ask the taxpayer to pull more money out of their pocket to support it. I'm not saying that this isn't a good thing to try and chase down. I'm just saying that there's a lot to it. And the $80 million upfront cost that was on your slide earlier, Delaney, I'm just, my assumption looking at the slide was that wasn't a municipality cost, a county cost, a state cost. Like if you were to statewide say that all of these cities and counties are going to need to build multi-million dollar facilities to manage all of this, the cost is going to be dramatically higher than $80 million. A couple other quick questions real quick, and then I'll but I appreciate that you guys are already looking at the waiver process. So I guess we can talk more about that in the future. The other quick comment that I'll throw in there, and that's in looking at what's come out, there's a significant amount of specificity about the colors of containers or colors of lids. And to me, it seems pretty wasteful to say, all right, everybody spend a bunch of money and replace a bunch of lids and throw a bunch of lids away. So maybe an idea would be that if specific lids or specific labels or specific containers are the statewide goal, that maybe there's a time frame that is proposed to say within so many years of instituting whatever your program is, that there's a transitional period as containers get to the point where they're failing, we replace them. And when we replace them, maybe we replace them with a color that's more appropriate. I've got more comments, but we can talk more offline.
No, I appreciate that.
This is great.
Great. I think I can kind of re-comment. I can send this presentation in an email to maybe either Michelle or someone else to, you know, send this out to the greater SWAC group, or maybe for those who weren't able to make it today. And I can include some sort of like tangible thing about public or feedback on the waiver process, et cetera. And it would likely be contacting me directly with comments, et cetera. So I can also put that in this email. I didn't include a slide about the new legislation that passed this last spring about the bins and lids. Colin, I don't know if you want to elaborate anything about that, but my understanding is that these bins would be replaced, or the lids would be replaced, once the bin is damaged or broken, and then the new color based on these requirements would be replaced. So it is talking about what you're saying of it'd be better, it would be replacing a broken lid or bin with the new color.
Yep, right. Just stepping in here, that's totally accurate. So you're not required to replace them and meet color standards until it's not functional.
How are we for time? I think it was like 30 minutes on this. I only have like two more slides, but I want to make sure that these are all great comments and questions.
Two more slides, and we'll see where we are. How's that?
Great. So this is the Orca Readiness Plan and deliverables. We're definitely like open to feedback here, and I'll include that in the email I send to Michelle. The really only like last content slide here is about guidelines for individual exemptions. That was this green box on the waiver slide I showed earlier. And what Ecology is working on is providing guidance to jurisdictions on how to navigate exempting these individual households or individual businesses from the collection requirements and what kind of thresholds or justifications would be allowable to exempt these individuals. And this is, we're kind of basing this around exemptions from the collection requirements if the organic material is managed through an equal or better environmental value. And this is language that guidance we're developing for jurisdictions to use come early 2026. What I do want to flag, if for those who may not know from the recent legislative session in House Bill 1497, there was a slight language change. So it used to say jurisdictions may exempt individuals who ask for one, something along the lines, but now it's saying individuals must, or sorry, jurisdictions must exempt individuals who ask for one. So there is a slight language change there that I just wanted to flag for everyone. And briefly, looking ahead to the next 12 months, Organics team is working on a number of amazing things. One is the open rulemaking for WAC 173-350, which is addressing contamination in incoming feedstocks. If that's something you or others are interested in, Colin is involved on that rulemaking process. I believe it's still in a comment period as well. And then we will be releasing a compost market study later this summer that gives rough numbers on the demand for finished compost and the amount of material that may be coming through the system with these organics management laws. And then from our food center, releasing a food data hub to improve food rescue tracking this summer, along with some food service compliance educational materials for businesses to use. And like I said, there's the ORCA waiver process. I don't know if anyone has any more questions, but that was my last slide. And then
Martin
this is our amazing team.
He went to engineering school and they learned questions. Still in that class.
So just one last, I guess, comment. We get temperatures well over 100 degrees for a significant period of time here in the Eastside State. And food in plastic containers in that heat or even in direct sun gets it causes more challenges. And so that in the back of your mind as we're having conversations moving forward, that whatever we're doing, whatever program we have, we don't get up to 70 or 80 degrees in the summer. We're up to 110 at times. So but this idea that 26 weeks out of the year, maybe we don't collect for 2 or 3 months because the vectors and the health risks that come from rotting food in plastic containers maybe outweighs a little bit. But I don't know, just throwing some stuff out to talk about.
For sure. Well, I live in Spokane, so I understand the heat constraints there. But yeah, the 26 weeks is the minimal requirement. So that's typically every other week for collection. Yeah. But I know some, you know, especially in Spokane for my area, you have to account for winter time. So maybe they do it just like everything but winter. So that's why we defined it to kind of account for everyone or different collection schedules in across the state.
And Delaney, I'm going to interrupt again. Rich, you had another question or comment?
Yeah, the focus is on food waste, but having organic collection, does that mean all organics, meaning forcing us to have them segregate grass clippings and things of that nature?
Organic material would include like those grass clippings.
I mean, the onus, the initial onus is on food waste and greater than a half a cubic yard per week, right?
Oh, yeah, quarter, yeah.
That's for businesses. So businesses specifically, you know, typically are going to have the food waste versus residential. They're going to have kind of a mixture of both.
Right, but the law was aimed at food waste, not general organic materials.
Well, are you talking about kind of that data slide where I was saying that food waste makes up a large portion of our stream?
Well, no, the slide that says businesses that generate greater than a quarter, and that was cubic organic material waste per week. We're talking organic material general, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So that means all the various grass cutting companies and things of that nature.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yes. Hey, Nick, this question might be for Colin or Michelle, but since we got you mentioned the law to, or the new legislation to harmonize the cart and bin colors. Since we were talking about this with Kennewick earlier today, I just had a question. In Kennewick, we still have for our recycling system, we still have the 18-gallon bins that we used to use for source separated recycling. How will that law affect recycling systems like that still use the old bins?
Are these bins, just for a point of clarification, are these the ones that then the hauler is collecting?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it does apply. So the recycling now will have to be blue and or a shade of it. And it is, and I just want to be sure so just stop me here if I'm not answering your question specifically, but if those are, if it's a functional bin, then until you need to replace it, you won't need to comply with the bin color standardization.
Okay. So it doesn't say anything about bins being the roll carts, or can they still be these bins are just bins. They're the old source separated bins.
I use the word crate a lot.
Or crates. Yeah.
Like a milk crate.
The law specifically says 101 gallons or less. So,
that would mean carts. What I'm trying to get at is, does it mean we have to go to carts or to roll carts?
The roll, yeah, I guess. Is it 101 gallons or more?
No, they're much less. They're 18 gallons.
Yeah, okay, you already said 18 gallons. Yeah, I mean, I think so. How the law is spelled out is if it's less than 101, which it is, of course, and it is those bins that the hauler is actually picking up, then yes, they are subject to compliance.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought just making up information? Because that would be funny. I'm kidding. Don't do that. That's wrong.
Oh, I can't hear. If there are good jokes happening, I'm so sorry. I cannot hear them.
Oh, never mind. It wasn't a good joke. It was just, okay. It was me. Okay, well, thank you so much for the presentation. And if that could be emailed to us, that would be terrific. And is there any other questions, comments, or feedback? Okay, that's great. And then we're to West Richland, Richland's Green Waste Feasibility Study. Whoever is presenting that.
Knife, hey, Carlo D'Alessandro, Public Works Director, City of Richland. I'm going to introduce our consultant who did the study, but this, Ecology doing their presentation and then us doing ours really apropos of having some consistency here related to organic waste management. So in 2024, the city contracted with Herrera to do an organics waste feasibility study. The city of Richland does collect green waste and its yard waste. And knowing the new regulatory environment we'd be in, did an analysis to see what options we had. One, as a city, meeting compliance with the new law, and then the other being, if there was an opportunity for the city to become a regional facility for organics management. So I'm going to hand this off to Mary Shanks from Herrera and Nigel, and they'll provide the results of our study.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to ask, can everybody see the screen that I'm sharing? And does that look okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Thank you. So as Carla mentioned, we did this project. It was a team effort. I wanted to acknowledge quick the work that Richland did. They were amazing at helping us with the tonnage, helping with the waste characterization study that I'll talk about in a minute on a future slide. Really, that work was done by Cascadia. And I know Delaney talked about being hot. The way it worked out, Cascadia was in the field in Richland last July doing this work at the Horn Rapids landfill. So really, really hot when they were doing their work. JRMA really helped with the layouts that you'll see in a minute. Pacific Financial did work on the financing and what rates, what it would mean for rates in the city of Richland. And then Herrera worked on various aspects of it, including the site cost estimates for the improvements that you'll hear about in the slides. So moving on to the next one, this was just what we're gonna talk about today. And by the way, the legislation part of this will get very quick after the presentation that you just got. And so for the entire project, we really looked at the existing programs, what was happening with the collection of organics already in the city of Richland. We did interviews with industry stakeholders. I know Rebecca and Tammy were part of those interviews, as well as other jurisdictions and like the plant in Pasco that's being planned for the anaerobic digestion. We discussed with them options for taking food waste and what the plans are for that. We did coordinate with Colin, so nice to see you again, and thank you again for your help during the project. And as I mentioned, we did a waste characterization study. You're going to see the results of that in a couple slides. And then we evaluated what would happen with commercial collection programs. And then we really developed options, did the costing for those, and we are working right now on stakeholder engagement. So the next slides, really, there's a bunch of notes that I had on these, but I am not going to do them because Delaney just did a great job talking to you about the legislation. I'll give a plug for Ecology that they do have a really nice summary of their programs at that link that I'm showing there. And I'll say that House Bill 1799 is really the one we focused on for this study. For Benton County's interest, the thing that you'll need to consider is during your next solid waste management plan update, you will need to address organics more thoroughly than was done in your prior plan. When you submitted it, it wasn't required, but it will be for your next one, including looking at locations for organics, organic materials. And so just be aware of that in, like, you know, 5 years when you go into your next plan update. So I'm going to really focus in on the organics management law. That is that House Bill 1799. You just heard a lot about it. I will not go into the describing the ORCA, which was one of the things I planned on doing, but you got a very good explanation of that. As you noted, City of Richland is within an ORCA, and right now, the City of Richland is doing really well on compliance. And for them, we looked really at the 2030 requirement of compostable waste being 75% less than it was in the year 2015. And for the city of Richland, if that only applied to single family residences, they would already be in compliance and not have a problem with that. Because it's the total tonnage, we had to look at, you know, waste coming from multifamily, commercial, industrial, and the city of Richland would need to be on a path to reduce about 11,000 tons of additional organics material out of their waste stream. So looking at that, they would be looking at maybe putting food scraps into their yard waste bins, and having to look at the requirement that Delaney discussed about collections from businesses that would generate more than that 0.25 cubic yards. I usually look at that in gallons, so it's about 45 gallons of organic material per week. So again, the city of Richland's doing really well on that and is ahead, given that they already have a mandatory curbside collection program for yard waste. So as I had noted, the slide didn't move forward, just a second. For some reason, the slides don't want to go farther. I'm trying to show you the waste characterization study. Okay, now you're seeing it, right?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. It just wasn't going forward for some reason for a second. It wouldn't move past that legislation slide. So for the city of Richland, we looked at the work that has been done by Ecology on a regional basis. Plus, we did a waste characterization specific to the city of Richland. It wasn't your, let's say, typical waste characterization study, because that would look at each type of material stream. What we were doing is when the loads got brought to the sorters, anything that wasn't organics got just moved to the side and not further separated into like plastics, metals, things like that. So that's what you're seeing, is that dark gray, kind of black looking line. The green is what would be accepted in the current City of Richland organics collection program now, meaning it's really focused on collecting yard waste. And then the yellow is what's in the waste stream that technically would be a compostable material, whether that be food scraps, and that would be packaged or unpackaged food, and things like paper that would be compostable, cardboard, things like that as well. So that's where we're seeing the yellow. As you can see from the low percentages, the single family residents are doing pretty well at participating in the yard waste program. And there is some materials that could be captured that could be composted with some changes to the existing facility that the city of Richland has. Any questions on the waste characterization study before we move on to the options?
Quick question, Martin.
Sure.
So, it sounds like the green is what Richland is getting, that they are themselves able to compost. The yellow could be composted, but Richland is currently not able to. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Correct. And by able to, I should have maybe reworded that. The system that the city of Richland has now can compost food scraps. They're just currently not collected in the city system. The city's really focused on getting the single family yard waste.
Okay.
And so, so that time it worked fine. Right on to the next one, to option one. So Option one, you could look at it. I'm going to assume this audience is not all familiar with the city's compost facility, their current one. I look at option one as basically a doubling of the system that the city of Richland already has. So the city of Richland started their compost facility in 2010. In 2021, they upgraded their facility to have what are aerated static piles. That's these existing ones right here. And this doubles that to have 12. And really what that is you're putting in air and piped air to get air up into the piles. And then we'd have to increase the curing area. And then the existing screened area. So you're going to hear a lot about costs from Nigel, but I will note that this one is sized with the doubling of the facility. It could take up to 45,000 tons per year. We did look at the projections for the city and the city only, and this would be about 20,310 tons per year in 2030, and the 2044 projection for city tonnage is 32,533. The operating costs for doubling the facility that they have now goes up to almost $1 million a year. And now I'm just going to talk to you quite a bit about the capital costs in a couple of slides, so not focus on that. Those tonnages that I gave does assume that the system would move to accept non-packaged food scraps and edible food scraps into their yard waste bins. So any questions about option one? And at the end, I'll be able to come back to these slides as well, if there's any questions.
We're good.
Oh. Now I'm having another issue with it not wanting to move forward slides. Okay, are you guys seeing option two now?
Yes.
Okay, so option two, as you can see, is quite a bit larger. Option two goes from the 12 aerated static piles to increase that to 24. And it needed to really revise the curing areas. It's got a screening area up here. And the other thing is this facility would need much more in this way of operating staff. So it gets a building with a break room and a restroom out here. And the other big piece of equipment, again, you'll hear about costs in a second from Nigel, but it gets a depackager because this facility would be sized and to take packaged food and depackage it and add it to the compost. So this one is sized to take up to 120,000 tons per year. Our projections that we did looking at organic material coming from the city of Pasco and the city of Kennewick got us up to, in 2030, there would be about 55,687 tons. And up to in 2044, it would be about 109,000 tons. So there's a little bit of extra room here in the facility. This option is really only feasible given the costs would be long-term agreements with Kennewick and Pasco for the incoming feedstock, but also a long-term agreement. If you're sending feedstock there, you're buying compost back because there just isn't the storage room to store huge amounts of compost here. And in addition, the operating cost for this facility is estimated at about $2.3 million a year. So there's quite a bit of labor that would go into this, as well as electricity and to do the air to those piles. So this one has, you'll see in the cost, quite a huge jump for the cost to capital costs and operating costs for this facility. Any questions about this one before we jump to the costs?
I think we're good, Mary.
Well, that time it worked just fine. All right. Nigel, I get to take a drink of water and you're up.
Yeah, I get to look at a million different numbers on our other screen in case you guys have questions on these numbers. So these are the simple numbers that are the two different graphs that are a lot easier to read than the several hundred cells of Excel I have on my other screen. So if you have any more detailed questions, I'm happy to talk through those on other costs, including the depackager, which we estimated about $1.5 million for capital costs. So that is part of a huge jump in option two. But ultimately on your screen here, option two is the dark green, option one is light blue. As you could probably guess, based on the different layouts, option one would cost a lot less than option two. We have option one for capital costs, so site and building improvements. We have it estimated, and this is high level. This was a bird's eye view look at it. The layouts that you guys saw in those options were used to develop the cost estimate, including what we would anticipate needed for the various site and civil upgrades. So option one was estimated about 1.7 million. That's that light blue up at the top there. And then option two is estimated at 8.5 million. So obviously a huge jump from option one to option two. Like Mary mentioned, it's more than double the tonnage throughput would be provided in option two, and that's the regional facility compared to option one. So it does cost a lot more for capital improvements, but does also provide a lot more capacity. And in the following slides, we'll talk about the financial side of that, in what the residents of Richland would see, and also the residents of the larger regional facility application, if you were to go with option two. So in the various other rows, startup and commissioning for option one, there's a lot less equipment, a lot less materials. It's just a couple additional aerated static piles compared to option two, has the depackager and a bunch of other staff facilities. So startup and commissioning between the two is pretty different just based on those different layouts. The third row there is structures. You don't even see the light blue side. For the option one, it would just be a control shed at about $6,000. For the other option two, it would be a storage room, pre-processing building, bollards, push wall, control shed. For the various different, we had the building in option two that showed the depackager, but also showed the collection area. So in that option two, there's a lot more facilities for processing food waste as it comes in. Pads and bunkers, like Mary mentioned, option one just doubles the 6 aerated static piles to 12. Option two gets it up to 24. So it's just a lot more structures there. Pads and bunkers cost between the two. Option one's about $550K. Option two is about $1.7 million. And then the site civil, option one, not much comes to it. Additional electrical comes out to the pads. But option, and then also some rework of the existing pavement. So some asphalt would get torn up to get in new concrete for the aerated stack piles, and some additional infrastructure for those piles as well. Whereas option two gets a large portion of other materials, because we're talking about having a control, a staff facilities room. So we'd have to have some water there. We'd have to have additional electrical upgrades. So between those two, civil, you're looking at about $450K versus $1.5 million between the two options. And then, you know, as costs go, you add on tax, add on contractor's fee, insurance, bond, contingency, it skyrockets when you get from the overall cost before contingency, tax, et cetera, between the two options. So that's where you get from the $1.7 million to the $8.5 million between the two. So I know there's a lot of information, and like I said, I have a lot more information on my screen if you want any greater breakdown in the capital improvements. So I'll pause there and see if you guys have any questions on the two different costs.
Nigel, could this be phased, like you start with option one and then you start picking up option two as time progresses?
Absolutely. So this is like I talked about, this is high level on the two different layouts. But if we were, if you guys were to do that, how you would look at doing it, you wouldn't save all the 8. So the 8.5 million assumes that you just go straight to option two. The 1.7 assumes you just do option one. If you were to take the option one and progress to option two, you wouldn't necessarily save all that 1.7 million, but you'd save a good portion of it as long as you had it built to help for future development. Maybe it's put in some new conduit, or maybe it's build it in a way that allows for future development. But yeah, you wouldn't necessarily save all 1.7, but you would save a good chunk of it to expand. So yeah, you could definitely phase one option into the other option. The layout that we had a vendor do the layout for the aerated stack piles, it was ECS. They have done projects all throughout the country. So one thing that you would potentially need to do is there's some bunker walls on either side of the aerated stack piles. Might have to knock down one of those walls, but it wouldn't be, you know, tear out the entire structure and put an entire new structure. It would be modifications to existing to build a new. And similar with the various storage areas, if you guys have been out to the existing facility, some of the storage areas would maintain the same structure, maintain the same surface as existing. So the asphaltic surface or the gravel surface. Other areas might be paved in the future that maybe wouldn't be paved now, but it'd be a lot of decisions that could be made to avoid future costs by narrowing down what's actually needed for this facility. So that's a really long way of saying, yes, you could phase from option one into option two.
Carla, just as a question for the city of Richland, how would you plan on financing either of these? Is it general funds or is it bonds? How would you go about this?
Yeah, I mean, that is a philosophical question that we've brought toward a utility advisory committee, and one we'll end up bringing toward council. Whether we'd, slowly ramp up our collections and try to rate fund it, you know, build up on reserves and try to fund an expansion at some point is possible. If we felt that we were really constrained for time, yeah, looking at loans or bonding would be a potential. And those costs don't factor in, you know, financing. So,
right. And if I could, I just want to ask Waste Management, how would you guys use a facility like this?
Well, it would be necessary in order to provide an organics service to, let's say, the city of Kennewick. Option two, obviously, is the only one that would work because they would need to be able to accept the tonnage that we could collect in the city of Kennewick. So this would be the only facility of its kind that could accept all organics, food, and yard debris in the area. That would be close enough that would actually make it economically feasible to provide a curbside service.
Well, and as a part of that, one of my questions is, what's travel time? What's our travel time from City of Kennewick out to Richland? That's 25 minutes one way?
Yeah.
And ballparking, but that's, so we would need trucks, carts, staff, travel time. This is all stuff that, you know, we need to digest and figure out. As we have some time before we would need to put a waiver request in 2026 for the 2027 requirement, but I'm really happy that you guys did this, Richland, because now we have some kind of numbers to really start looking at and evaluating and adding on to figure out what this might look at. And I've got from the Ecology's website, I've got a map that shows three different composting facilities. One is Richland's, and there are two others that are, they're outside of Pasco, south into the east. I guess it's time for us to all start talking about what are all of these facilities? What do they currently do? And does another study like this need to happen at the other facilities or maybe in Pasco?
Richard, you got your hand up?
Yeah, I was going to jump in. So the option one, which assumes they're putting their waste in the recycle can, what indication do you think it's going to be successful? I mean, if most people have a garbage can in their kitchen. They don't have two garbage cans. And it can't be in a plastic bag, correct?
That is correct. The food would need to be not in any type of plastic bag. It would have to just be like apple cores, like extra, you know, food scraps from dinner or something.
You know, it's a plastic container they carry out to the garbage can and put it in, type of thing. I'm just thinking feasibility of actually people doing it. That's my only comment.
And Richard, I would agree with you. I can tell you that Pierce County fairly recently added food waste to their yard waste bins, allowing food to go in. And their initial participation rates in that, they've estimated at less than 10%. So it probably would be a slow ramp up to capturing that food tonnage based on what other municipalities have seen as they've added food to their yard waste bins. It's a new behavior.
Away from the meeting. So I guess I'm going to just look for any wrap-up comments at this point. Does anybody have any final comments? Mary, what would really help if you could forward that to Mr. Mahoney, and he can send the slide presentation to us, and that would give us a little bit more time to review that. And Nigel, if you have other slides that we didn't get through, could you include those? And that would give us some starting questions. Because sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with this, right? I mean, waivers will work for so long. I'm old. I'll die before I have to worry about it. But y'all are stuck. So if we could get the information and give us kind of a heads up, a path forward, that would really be helpful. And Carla, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. It's really helpful.
Yep, thank you.
Anybody wants to question offline or anything? Like all the hurdles and everything we've gone through to implement this over the years. So,
cool.
I'm available offline if anybody wants to ask.
You are the quietest Richland person I've ever seen.
That's why I survived so long.
Okay, anything else for anybody then? Well, thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it. It was very informative. And for those on the SWAT committee, the question I did have, this goes 90 minutes. Is that too long or is that long enough? Or would you rather see it down to an hour and meet a little more frequently? Any opinions? You want to think about it for next meeting, but just, you know, the information we got today was huge.
Yeah. I think it just depends on what you're talking about, because you could have
We could have two meetings with these two subjects.
Yeah, this is a big, I mean, these aren't normal subjects that you talk about all the
time. Right. Well, keep it in mind, we'll discuss it next time if that works for folks. Yeah. Okay, well, I have no clue how to shut down the computer, so good luck, people.
Oh, you have one last.
Oh.
The lithium ion batteries, information only. I don't know what that was.
I think it was just a slideshow, right?
Yeah,
it wasn't the agenda. It's just a slideshow. There was no presentation, to the best of my knowledge.
No, and what I was going to come back with is both Home Depot and Lowe's collect lithium batteries. I don't know if you saw the email exchanges, but it's just a pile. They just pile them up in a. Lowe's says you're supposed to put them in a plastic bag individually before you put them in the pile. There were no plastic bags available. So they're just little future lithium battery piles, fires, whatever. But personally, I think most of the triggering for a lithium battery is a pressure change or a temperature change. And if it's not currently being charged. And so I assume the reason we're getting fires in garbage trucks is when you squish the batteries, they go off. So I'm not quite sure from a moderate risk waste facility, I haven't heard of any Lowe's or Home Depot's burning down lately. So we might want to look into it as to mainly looking at temperature control type of aspects for us. Because if we do have an outbuilding at the moderate risk waste facility, I don't think you're going to air condition it. 110 degree weather might set them off. So we can, you know, think about how we're going to handle that if we do accept them.
Thank you, Rich. Okay. Any further discussion? Mary, I saw you had a comment on there, and I'm sorry it went by too fast. I can read it fast enough.
Oh, it was just that Nigel didn't have any other cost-related slides. He does have really detailed spreadsheets that go into how those costs were developed. So if you have any detailed questions about, like, what exactly does a depackager cost, we're happy to share those. But there wasn't another cost-related slide. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, the spreadsheets would be – Martin loves spreadsheets. Again, you got an A in that class. Okay, well, thank you again. Any further comments from anybody? We do have Quiet Richland Guy. For...
Great.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.